We finally wrap the conversation about detachment. So I'm inviting everyone to please listen carefully to what we're about to talk about this morning. And then, what those of you in corporation will say, we do the 9 bullet points of the true what we've learned or what has been spoken about detachment. This morning is our final conversation about detachment. In verse 1849, Lord Krishna talks about the perfection of renunciation. You have renunciation, you have detachment. They go hand in hand. Sometimes you can't tell the difference. Renunciation is not about just letting go of things in the physical way, but also within your mental capacity. So is detachment. So that's why we say renunciation and detachment, two pieces apart. The initial title, like I was thinking, was Renunciation is the Perfection of Detachment. So Lord Krishna talks about the perfection of renunciation. And this is what he says. He, she, whatever your pronouns are, he or she whose intellect is unattached everywhere, who has subdued himself or herself, from whom desire has fled, he attains the supreme perfection of freedom from action through renunciation. Let me repeat that again. You, whose intellect is unattached everywhere, in other words, everywhere you go, we will break it down. Who you have subdued yourself from that attachment, from all of that desire, from whom desire has fled, you attain the supreme perfection of freedom from action through renunciation. So when we look at this during this journey of life, this isn't about becoming inactive. It's about discovering freedom within action, within yourself, the action that you take. So Lord Krishna's words in verse 1849 carry a depth that unfolds the more we sit with them. When you really think about it. This is not a call to withdraw from life, nor a prescription for being passive. It is an invitation to you and I, and anyone who's going to listen to this message, into a radically different way of living and acting. This is about practicality. You want to develop spiritually and you want to live a happy, joyful life. This is it. That's why he talks so gratefully with that words of wisdom about detachment or calling on attachment and renunciation. One rooted in freedom rather than outer control. Detachment is not disengagement. When Krishna speaks of an unattached intellect everywhere, he didn't say just in your room or in your house. Everywhere you go, everywhere you let your mind go, everywhere you are physically at, everywhere you allow your spiritual self to go, he's pointing to a mind that no longer compulsively clings to experiences, identities, outcomes, or opinions. We have to be free of that. We cannot identify ourselves by our experiences that, oh, just because you did something wrong, so I'm a bad person. No. This does not mean the mind becomes dull or indifferent or disengaged. On the contrary, your mind becomes alive. God wants you to be alive in everything you do, not get attached to. It becomes more alive, more responsive, and more precise. Imagine watching a beautiful sunset, or you go to the ocean, or whatever it is you want. The unattached intellect drinks in its colors, feels the quiet awe of God, and allows gratitude to arise naturally. But it does not say, I need this again tomorrow. Because God might have a better plan than what you just seen tomorrow. But if you get attached to today, how will you enjoy what God is ready to do tomorrow? Or my happiness depends on sunsets like this. The experience completes itself in that moment and dissolves without leaving a residue. You are in the presence of God, the all, like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And you let it radiate, you feel it, you enjoy it every moment of it. And then you let it go. I haven't said this till now. Remember, is it 2024, we were planning to go to Mallorca? The reason spirit did not is because they said, son, I have other plans. Oh, you enjoy Mallorca, you want to go back there. What about the rest of the world that I want you to see? I got it, but I wasn't so happy about it because I had my mindset. But that's what spirit is teaching us. Enjoy whatever spirit brings to your life. Totally be present. Enjoy, celebrate it. But then let it go. Let it go. Because life will come and go, and other things, experiences will come and go. Now imagine receiving harsh criticism. You know we have opinions, and we can be critical of others and of ourselves. The unattached intellect still feels this thing. Nobody likes to be criticized. You still feel this thing. They don't say, run away from it and act as if it didn't happen. No, feel it. Because you might learn something from that. Feel it. But it still evaluates whether it is truth in what was said. Because people might maliciously criticize you. But if you think their opinion, what they are saying is true, then you're no longer living in freedom. Feel it. And then know yourself. When you review yourself, say, no, that's not me. That person is acting from jealousy or for whatever it is. And then brush it off. Don't hold grudges against that person. Because then you are still attached to it. The person has moved on. You are still fuming. And you're messing up your whole day. You might mess up your whole month. And every time you see that person, because you've engaged it, every time you think of that person, you see that person, that anger will come again. That stink. Instead of you go, you don't say that when it rains upon you. If it dries, then you are okay, isn't it? You don't hold on to, I want to be wet. Or when the sun is scorching, you are so happy to be inside the air conditioning, isn't it? But it does not build a story around it because somebody told you so. Because the story you build is, oh, I'm unworthy because somebody put you down. No. They say, let them say. What they say, let them say. You know? or you build this story, they always disrespect me. So now you are planning how you're going to get even. Or you say, I must defend my image. What image are you? If you don't identify, you don't have any image except that you are an immortal soul created by God. That should be your image. Not your image, oh, I'm a perfect person. Oh, people think I'm good. There is no one, like Jesus said, who is good. Your mind and mine has the good part of it and has the bad part of it. We're trying to walk it off. I mean, we think nasty things within our head, don't we? So you don't need to defend any image. You let it go. That's what Lord Krishna was saying. The emotion moves through, the lesson is taken if there is one, and then the mind returns to stillness. From where you are, you go back to who you are. When it's good, when it's not, it doesn't move. You enjoy, you feel, and let it be. Nothing is carried forward unnecessarily. This is not avoidance. This is not like, oh, okay. No, it is intelligent non-accumulation. Lord Krishna's phrase, subdued himself. Let me quote that again so that we know. He whose intellect is unattached everywhere. You never know where somebody will insult you. It might be in the grocery store or they bump into you. He's unattached everywhere. Who has subdued him or herself, from whom desire has fled. He or she attains the supreme perfection of freedom from action through renunciation. Because we were born in freedom. We were created in freedom. We must return to that perfection of freedom. So when Lord Krishna says subdued himself, is often misunderstood as a self-denial or repression. Krishna is not asking you to repress yourself. But what is really being subdued is not life energy or your creativity or individuality. It is the compulsive dominance of your lower self. It is your lower self. You cannot allow it to dominate you and lead you by your nose, because that's what desire does. The part of us driven by fear, craving, comparison, insecurity, and the constant demand for validation, that's what Lord Krishna is telling you. It's got to go. It's not saying you should repress it, because you repress it, it's going to come back. No, you let it go. You don't attach yourself. That's not your identity. That's not who you are. You are beyond all of that. And you work on it. Because somebody tells you, the moment you think of it, you will transform it. No, they don't know what they're talking about. When this lower self is no longer in charge, a deeper intelligence naturally steps forward. That's what we call God's wisdom. He leads you. This higher self is not dramatic or loud. It is quiet, steady, and content by nature. Let's not miss that. It's content by nature. Well, the sun is burning. Okay, this is what is being given this time. The breeze, okay, you have food to eat. You're not saying, oh, I want champagne and caviar. And if you are giving caviar and champagne, then enjoy it. It's not saying you shouldn't enjoy. You must enjoy life. You must be fully present. That's why that higher self is always content. Can you imagine if God who created us is not content? He does not need to win every argument. That's your higher self. But your lower self, oh, there's going to be a great debate that has never been seen. in the course of humanity. No, that's only ourself. Does not need to win every argument, prove its worth, or control every outcome. And we are all guilty of that. We want to control life. It acts because action is appropriate, not because it needs something from the action to feel complete. I mean, if you don't have to use the bathroom, you know you are complete if there's no urge to go use the bathroom, right? You don't say, oh, once I use the bathroom, now I am a complete human. No, it's just the process that you have to do. You don't have to eat yourself silly to feel complete. What if you are in a village where there is no Starbucks and you can't get coffee? Will you say you are not complete? No. In this state, desires are not violently fought or morally condemned. Let's get it. He didn't say you shouldn't have desire. Don't let the desire be the one leading you. They simply lose their hypnotic power because you are not a slave to them. You may still want things, comfort, success, love, beauty, but these wants no longer define your sense of self or dictate your inner peace. The Lord didn't say you shouldn't want to be successful or comfortable. No. And the definition of success varies from people, isn't it? And that's what he's saying. You are more than the success or whatever image they've crafted you in. These desires no longer define your sense of self or dictate your inner peace. They become preferences rather than compulsions. I would rather be where it's breezy and I can still go for a walk and go for a hike. Than, oh, if it's not breezy, I can't go for a hike. Oh, things can happen. You can walk toward a goal with full dedication and still remain inwardly relaxed. If the goal is achieved, there is gratitude. If it is not, there is learning and acceptance. Some of the people we think, oh, they are the movers and shakers. They have failed in so many things, they just and some of them say they would rather have, they like that they've gone through the experience because it gives them an insight. But some of us, oh, if it didn't work out, oh, I'm a failure, oh, you know, we start condemning ourselves. Either way, whether you achieve what you want or not, your identity remains intact and your peace remains undisturbed. This is where Krishna's phrase, freedom from action through renunciation, that's what he said, reveals that contrast, that beauty. Because how do you act without, you know, looking for the reward of action? And that's the beauty of it. And once we get it, it's very simple, isn't it? On the surface, it sounds contradictory. How can one be free from action while acting? Huh? The answer lies in the concept of doership. Who is doing it? Because most of us we think, oh, I'm the one doing it. And well, the one who is doing it, if he withdraws, we know we're all kaput. And that's why we honor God in our lives, because God is doing it through us. Most human suffering does not come from action itself, but from the psychological burden of, I am the one doing this. This must succeed. This defines who I am. Others must recognize me for this. When these layers of ego, ownership falls away, action becomes light, doesn't it? It happens through you rather than by you. Because if we're the one doing it, I think most of us, at least those of us here for this Sunday service, there will be no war in the world, will there be? People will not be killing each other. We'll be doing kumbaya, won't we? Holding hands. I love you as monkey love banana, let's, you know. But if we're the one doing it, we would have stopped all these other battles going on. We would have kicked out the tyrants, won't we? But change will happen when God has signed off, when God says, okay, it's time now. That is God doing it through us. You will achieve success when God says, it is your time, not before it, not after it. If you are single and you want to be married, you can't force it. If you let it come at the right time, yeah. But if you do force it, we know what happens. Even those who can, you know, there are prayers you can do when it's drought where rain will fall. Don't think it's because you raise your voice that it's because God said, okay, I'll let it happen. We remember Jonah, right? So things happen through us rather than by us. So let's get that clear in our head. When things are going for you, thank God for it. When there are hardship, also thank God for that challenge. That way you will have insights. You still wake up, you go to work, care for your family, create, build, serve, speak, and move through the world. But something subtle has changed. You now know you are not the doer. There's no longer a tight knot of anxiety or pride or fear around your actions. Then you actually enjoy doing it. Let it fall where it may. You are not constantly calculating what this moment will give you in return. You are simply responding to what life is asking of you right now with clarity and sincerity. I'm sure if we ask some people why they go to church, some of them go because they are afraid to go to hell. I don't think God wants that. God doesn't want you to come to her or him because you are off your feet. Come when you feel like you want to hang out. You know, you enjoy the company. Some of us, we add towards our boss because we don't want to get fired, even though we know the boss is doing something wrong. So when we do things out of that detachment, is actually we're blessing ourselves. We're no longer, you know, like a pretzel. Krishna calls this the supreme perfection, not because it is rare or elite, but because nothing lies beyond it. There's no higher psychological or spiritual state than inner freedom while fully engaged in life. Because without that inner freedom, what is life anyway? Is it Vermont or is it Maine that they said, live free or die? New Hampshire, thank you. Every time I see that, I chuckle because it is so true. If you cannot live in that inner wisdom, what are you doing here on earth? Just kill over. I'm not saying go kill yourself. Even people try to kill themselves. When God hasn't signed off, it won't happen. They might maim themselves, you know. So that's what Lord Krishna is saying. That's supreme perfection. Live in that inner freedom. You were created with it. It is there with you. Nothing greater than that. on a spiritual state, on a psychological state, that inner freedom. While you are enjoying that. This perfection is not something new that you manufacture. It is the unveiling of what has always been there for each and every one of us. It doesn't matter whether you are bound to the bone, you're bound to the bone or not. Every human being desires, every soul desires that inner freedom because it is who we are. So it is nothing you can, it is the unveiling of what has always been there. Like space does not need to become vast to have space, is it? Simply is vast once the walls are removed. Your true nature is already free. The practices of detachment, self-observation, humility, and surrender are not about adding something to you. Let me repeat that in case the practices of detachment, self-observation, humility, and surrender are not about adding something to you. It's already there. They're about subtracting what is false. Whatever is doesn't give you freedom, that is false. Take off the mask and breathe nicely. When ego drops, when our pride drops, and personal agenda dissolves, life begins to feel less like a battlefield, isn't it? And more like a flowing dance. A lot of us have personal agenda, and that makes us go crazy. If it's not fulfilled, we have all kinds of, but when all of those are no longer leading us by the nose, yeah, life is more interesting. Decisions still matter. That's what Lord Krishna said. But they no longer feel heavy. Effort still happens. You still have to put in the effort. But it is no longer strained. Even difficulty takes on a different texture. Pain may still arise, but suffering, the mental resistance layered on top of pain, gradually fades. Because pain, I've always wondered, they say is physical. But my experience is pain is psychological, it's mental. Because athletes do it. Sometimes people break their bones, they don't even know yet. Until you register, something is off. Then they are thinking, something has happened. So if the pain is there, but the suffering is because of our mental nature. In this state, every movement can indeed become a dance when you have that freedom, when you let. Not because life becomes easier or glamorous, but because you are no longer moving against it. Every word becomes a song, not because you are poetic, but because you are speaking from presence rather than from fear or manipulation. Every breath becomes a prayer, not because you are religious, but because gratitude and reverence for existence that this is who you are. Naturally arise when the mind is no longer clouded by grasping. This is the quiet revolution Krishna is pointing towards. Thank you, Lord Krishna. A life where you are fully involved, yet inwardly free. Where you and I care deeply, yet are not owned by what we care about. Where we act decisively, yet remain unattached to outcomes. Where nothing essential is added to us and nothing really is taken away, only the illusion that once obscured that freedom, it falls apart. This is not what they call escapism. This is the highest form of engagement. It is not indifference. It is the deepest form of love. Isn't that what they say? If you love it, let it go, right? And it is not a distant spiritual idea like, oh, you have to, you know. It is a living possibility in each moment. You choose awareness over habit, surrender over control, and freedom over fear. When I wrap this up, the 9 points, you will see where Lord Krishna is saying, you don't need to be fully realized to, you know, every time you walk against all these things that I talked about, you are regaining your freedom. So that is what we've talked about, renunciation and detachment. Two peas in a pod. Now let's do the 9 points so that we can refresh and hopefully that number will stick in our head. And I will quote the verses, but just remember what, you know, and you can go get your Bhagavad Gita too. After these past few weeks of reflecting on detachment through the Gita, several core insights stand out. That practical wisdom that Krishna offers, not as abstract philosophy, but as guidance for daily living and real spiritual growth. You practice these 9 points, I bet you quickly know who you are. Number one, in verse 247, Krishna lays the foundation. Detachment is not indifference. It doesn't mean withdrawing from life or caring less. It means engaging fully, giving your best effort while releasing the anxious grip of outcomes. You act with sincerity, discipline, and devotion. But without the inner tension, it must turn out this way. Let go of that. This shifts life from pressure to presence. We will still aim high, but your peace no longer depends on result. That is the foundation. That's number one. In verse 248, he deepens it by teaching equanimity, that place of balance. You go out, you come back, you go out, you come back. Say, focus on action, not reward. You have authority over your effort, your attitude, and your integrity, but not over how things unfold. If we're all behaving right towards each other, love will flow, won't it? That we can control. When this truth is absorbed, a huge portion of stress and self-blame dissolves. These are things we've just stopped. Success no longer inflates us. Failure no longer crushes us. We remain inwardly steady. And that's what Krishna calls true yoga, unity, the oneness, balance of mind, true gain and loss, praise and criticism, victory and defeat. In verse 319, Krishna reframes desire. He said, desires are like rivers flowing into the ocean. We know ocean can absorb all kinds of rivers. You don't need to dam them, in other words, to have the over dam or fight them. Let them come and go without disturbance. The problem isn't having desire, it's being ruled by them. When desire loses its power to dictate you and I's identity and worth, it naturally loses its grip. That's number three. Number four. Verse 420. It shows how detachment actually enhances love and effectiveness. If you love them, let them go. When possessiveness drops, relationships flourish, isn't it? You stop needing others to complete you emotionally. Love becomes spacious, supportive, and non-controlling. In action, too, you become freer and more creative because your energy is no longer tied up in self-protection or comparison and validation. Number five, in verse 5:10. This is what, when we talk about the lotus, we all remember that, don't we? The lotus metaphor. Live like a lotus leaf in water. Be fully engaged in the world. Working, serving, loving, but not soaked by it. Experiences pass through us, through you and I, without leaving binding impressions. We participate without being psychologically owned by what happens. That is the lotus for us. Number six. 6:4 points to identity itself. Detachment matures when you recognize that you are not your moods. We all do have moods, don't we? Nor your thoughts. Because if you think you are your thoughts, you might be mirroring somebody else's thoughts. Not your temporary state. I always like that. When you see everything as temporary, it allows you to, you know. When I was growing up, we said the young shall grow. You know, in other words, the little one, you don't know what they're going to become tomorrow. They might come from poor, dirt family, you don't know, but tomorrow things change because that state there is a temporary thing. So when we see things as temporary, we won't get attached to it. It helps us to let go. We are the unchanging witness of all these passing phenomena. One bad day doesn't define our lives. One success doesn't define our worth. We are the whole story, not a single episode. So when you're watching your TV, remember that. One episode doesn't tell the whole story. Number 7, 13:9, verse 13:9. It brings us encouragement. Each step of detachment brings immediate relief. You don't have to wait for some final enlightenment. I always like that. You don't have to. Every act of letting go of resentment, fear, comparison, or control creates more peace right now because that is now you need, not tomorrow. Progress on this path is practical and experiential, not postponed to some distant spiritual finish line. That's why they say a sinner, a saint was a former sinner, isn't it? He just didn't become a saint overnight. You know, they work on it little by little. Number 8, verse 14:22. Krishna speaks about transcending the different levels of life, the modes of life. Detachment doesn't add anything new to us. That's what he's saying. It reveals what is already there. That inherent freedom within us. That's number 8. Don't forget that. The highest achievement is not an external accomplishment. It is the uncovering of the inner stability that was always present but hidden under attachment. That freedom is there, but attachment doesn't let us sit. Number 9, verses 15:5, addresses freedom from delusion. When attachment loosens, clarity grows. We begin to see life more as it is, not as our fears and hopes distort it. Because most of us, we live between hopes and fear. That's what it is now. We act more simply, more truthfully, and with less inner conflict when we take the mask off. So taking together the Gita's teachings on detachment form a practical path to inner freedom that applies to everyone. Whether you are a busy professional, a parent, a CEO, a student, or a spiritual seeker, whatever title you put on yourself, whether you are the future architect, engineer, these principles can transform how we relate to action, to results, and to life itself. This that Lord Krishna is telling us, it doesn't require a dramatic leap. It begins with a single step. Choosing just for today to act wholeheartedly without clinging to outcomes. And from that small shift, a quieter mind, a lighter heart, and a deeper freedom naturally unfolds. May this opportunity, this wisdom Lord Krishna has shared with us, may it bless us. May we be able to act on it. And may it lead us to full enlightenment. Amen.